Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Inside the Football Business, where we go inside the game and talk about what's going on outside the lines. Obviously, we're down to one more game in college football, a national championship game, Alabama versus Clemson, this upcoming Monday. This weekend starts the NFL playoffs with the wild card weekend. Last Sunday, obviously, a lot of things had changed, you know, with the Steelers getting in at the last minute because of the Jets loss. And then, obviously, you know, that led to Black Monday, where we had a number of coaches fired, some we expected. One with the Indianapolis Colts, Chuck Pagano, who everyone, you know, said that was going to be let go. He obviously signed an extension. So we'll talk a lot about the, as far as the GMs, kind of what's going on, the different situations there in the NFL today. So Neil Stratton, as always, is with us, and as we kind of get into that, how's everything going, Neil?
It's great, Justin. It's a busy time, but busy is exciting. Busy is fun, and I'm like probably the only person in the world who looks forward to the week after Christmas. You know, that's kind of when things really get exciting and crazy and wild in the football industry, and everyone else is putting their Christmas decorations away, and you know, people that are kind of in this part of the business are you know, very heightened and kind of can't wait to wake up in the morning.
Yep, for sure. And obviously, we'll start with the Cleveland Browns. They decided to go ahead and release both their head coach and their GM, Ray Farmer. The GM was released, and they've done some things interesting here in the last couple of days in regards to their hires. And a lot of people, you know, have questioned these moves, you know, and people are saying, hey, can this Moneyball thing work? Jimmy Haslin, you know, has been the owner. This is his fourth GM under him. You know, we know that the Ray Farmer failed. Obviously, you know, his first round picks, there's been much publicized, much talked about in regards to Johnny Manziel and Justin Gilbert from a couple of years ago. But, you know, kind of what are you hearing? I mean, you know, I know a lot of people are concerned you know, criticizing these moves, saying, hey, this isn't baseball, this isn't Moneyball, this is the NFL, you need football guys making football decisions. Obviously, the two guys they hired, non-football experience, non-football guys, Sasha Brown, the executive vice president of football operations, and Paul DePasto, the chief strategy officer. DePasto was a guy who was depicted by Jonah Hill in Moneyball, the movie there with Brad Pitt depicting Billy Bean. So let's start out with the biggest topic around there with the Cleveland Browns.
Well, the difficulty in Cleveland, I think, if you're a Cleveland fan, is just how seemingly rudderless the team has been ever since Jimmy Haslam arrived there. I mean, he arrives and kind of under a cloud. He's under investigation, you know, by the FBI, I believe, you know, federal investigation. And then, you know, he starts to make changes. And you know, as you alluded to, this will be his fourth GM, essentially. I don't know if Sasha Brown is going to hold the GM title. He's executive vice president of football operations. He's a de facto GM. But the team has continually moved in different directions. The other thing that's really kind of surprising, I think, is, you know, where he came in, they had an original set of scouts. They fired the scouts before the draft very publicly. Wouldn't even allow, as I recall, they wouldn't even allow them to go into the draft room for the draft. You kind of need scouts and their opinions, if for no other reason than to kind of run the post-draft board and pick up your undrafted free agents. They weren't allowed to come in. They come in, the new GM comes in, they hire a new set of scouts. Many of them have never been scouts before. That didn't really work out. And then when Ray Farmer came in, he brought in perhaps the most seasoned, experienced scouts in the business and hired them all. They didn't come cheaply. They haven't necessarily had an excellent record over the last 2 years, but I presume they're going to cut bait with all those scouts as well. Now, I don't know, I don't have details on the kind of contracts they had or how much longer they have or anything along those lines. So maybe they won't take a knife to the entire scouting department. Maybe they'll keep some around. But it looks like they're going to go in an entirely different direction once again. If they're really going to take this Moneyball approach, maybe they don't need scouts. I mean, everyone who's seen the movie knows that there was a very kind of public, a major confrontation between the owner or the GM who wanted to go in a new direction and the old school scouts who had kind of always done it in a different way. I don't know how you predict what's next for the Browns, and that kind of instability is not a good thing, especially in a division where there's been a lot of stability at the coaching level and at the GM level. So, you know, I don't know. Are the Browns going to kind of go off kind of in a Bengals direction where they will just rely solely on their coaches and I guess whatever algorithms seem to fit for scouting, or will they have maybe an advocate for the old way and keep a couple of the older scouts around? Will they continue to watch schools in a way, you know, that most scouts do, where, you know, they send scouts on the road and they watch all the players that National or Blesto have kind of pointed out as guys that should be success stories? Will they even use the National Blesto? Will they kind of try to go their own way? I mean, there is a remarkable, breathless number of questions ahead for the Browns, you know, a franchise that has really had more questions than answers almost since Jimmy Haslam got there. So if you're looking for, I guess if you're a Browns fan, it's maybe not a time to get too excited. If you're a football fan and kind of a student of the inside part of the game and how teams make decisions like you and I are, it's fascinating because the Browns have almost been a petri dish for ways to do it, and especially, unfortunately for Browns fans, ways to do it wrong almost ever since Jimmy Haslam got there. So kind of a fascinating experiment going on in Cleveland right now. You know, I can't wait to see what the next development will be. A lot of instability there. I guess we'll continue to monitor it and just see where it goes. And it's fascinating to watch.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you bring up some good points there. Here, you know, and I agree with you there, being a football guy, you know, and being on the evaluation process and different things. But I guess if you take the other side of the coin there, they've been so bad for the number of years, you know, why not take a risk? Why not, you know, the old ways haven't worked for the Browns. I mean, we all can agree upon that. So, I mean, you know, hey, could this work? Maybe not. But if it doesn't work, they're not in any you know, other, you know, spot that they were, you know, this year. So if they give it they give this a couple of years and it doesn't work, oh well. You know, I guess is I think maybe that's what Haslam's, you know, thinking is hey, we've got to try something different, and if worst case scenario this doesn't work, we can go back to way, you know, that the other 31 clubs are kind of operating. You know, I think you bring up a good point there with the Bengals. You know, Mike Brown has been, you know, very cheap in his, you know, scouting staff and scouting budgets there. You know, so does, you know, and they've been successful here the last number of years, obviously not going anywhere besides the first round of the playoffs, but they've been competitive, you know, with that kind of, you know, approach. So maybe, you know, that's you know, Jimmy Haslam's, you know, thinking there. And obviously he came from the Steelers, who were a, you know, a founding member of Blesso, you know, back, you know, in the day, and they've kind of been the, you know, the ways that people have looked and, you know, develop, hey, go, you know, developing through the draft, developing, you know, your scouts and the you know, the front office and how you do it to that there. But maybe, you know, they're like, hey, we screwed it up for a number of years. Why not we just take this shot in the dark? It could work. It could fail, but we're neither, you know, any more worse than we were, you know, back here in 2015. You know, if 2016 and 2017 doesn't work out, maybe then they go back, you know, there. I think that's the only way he could be thinking, you know, just saying, hey, we've got to try to change it. We got to try to do something different. Does anybody agree with that? I think, you know, football guys like me and you say no. But I do applaud his willing to try something new when it's all said and done.
Well, I agree with you there, Justin. But I think one thing, another point that needs to be made is, I believe, I haven't checked this, I believe when Jimmy Haslam took over that team, Mike Tomlin was coaching the Steelers, Marvin Lewis was in Cincinnati, And I'm not sure if Harbaugh was in Baltimore, but I think he was. This will be, I think, their third or fourth head coach as well. And two of those hires, Rob Chudzinski and Mike Pettine, had never been head coaches before. It would not be unusual for this to be the first GM or head coach change that Haslam had made. This is his fourth for both, I think, at least third coach and fourth GM. How long are they going to give this new – I mean, this new shift is a radical departure. No one else has really tried it. A lot of people have talked about it. How long do you give it? I mean, I think Haslam has shown that he's got a hair trigger. Do you give it 2 years, which is essentially what everyone else has gotten? Do you give it 5 years? I mean, what's the answer there? I think, really, to me, you owe a head coach, especially a first-time head coach, and probably a first-time GM, as Ray Farmer was, at least 4 years. This is not easy stuff. There are very few coaches and very few GMs who come in and instantly get it. I mean, I think Ron Wolf is a good example of that. Here's a guy who's seen as, you know, one of the better GMs in recent history, had a great run with the Packers, traded for Brett Favre, you know, whatever, whatever. A lot of people forget he started off in Tampa and got run out of there. And eventually, you know, came back to Green Bay, having learned from his mistakes, turned out to be an excellent GM. How do you learn? I mean, I know that on-the-job training it's hard to come by, but if you're not given a real opportunity to make a few mistakes and learn from them, how do you really ever get that experience that you need? So, I don't know. If I'm a Browns fan, I'm concerned. I'm concerned that there's not enough, that these people aren't being given enough of an opportunity. Mm-hmm. You could argue that the wrong people have been hired. Maybe you can't argue with that. But at least give them a real chance to prove that they don't know what they're doing, rather than making a change essentially every time the wind changes directions.
Yeah, you know, and that's a, you know, definitely some good points. We'll be able to see kind of what happens, you know, with the Cleveland Browns. You are correct. All those coaches were in place when Jimmy Haslam took over, the Cleveland Browns there. So, you know, we get down to kind of, you know, in the south, your neck of the woods there with the Saints, and, you know, there's speculation that Sean Payton, you know, wants out. The Saints maybe want a second-round pick for him. Will be somebody willing to kind of give that up for? The rumor was that the Colts reached out to, Sean Payton before extending, you know, Chuck Pagano, giving him a new contract there. You've got, you know, the GM there, you know, running both the Pelicans and the Saints. You know, there's some talk about maybe he'll just go over to the Pelicans, you know, there. This is interesting, you know, and the question be, will anybody be able to get Sean Payton, give him the second round, and how then do they still, you know, follow the Rooney Rule, you know, to what it's looking for, and we're giving to, you know, minority candidates a true, you know, fair look at the head coaching position?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, if you look at the Eagles, they immediately interviewed Deuce Staley for the head coaching position and a couple of others. But I thought Staley was interesting because that immediately satisfies the Rooney Rule. These other teams like the Colts, I don't know that they've given consideration to anyone but Pagano. And, you know, depending on who you believe, either they danced with Payton or they didn't. But if they had, I'm not sure exactly how they get around that. And the Rooney Rule is obviously something that isn't going away, and it's something that I think has probably made the league better, that has given more consideration to coaches that deserved a shot that might not have gotten one otherwise. I'm not really sure how to answer that, Justin. It's a great, great question. But looking specifically at Payton, I mean, it's an interesting thing because clearly this is, to me, reading the tea leaves, it's clear the Saints are looking for, have given him permission to look around, and they're kind of eager to wash their hands of him, given the fact that they're only asking for a second rounder. I mean, if they really wanted him to stay, they could pretty much ask for King's ransom. I believe he has 2 years left on his contract. The difficulty that you have, and I think the timing of it is hard, because if Payton continues to just look around and is given essentially carte blanche to find a new deal, how long do you wait? I mean, I guess the good news is that there are some teams in the playoffs that have hot coordinators, if you want to go that route, that aren't going to be able to talk to anyone for a while. So if you're willing to just kind of wait in limbo, if Sean Payton does get a new job, to hire somebody, I guess that's a good thing. But it's such a muddy situation in New Orleans right now with the ownership, with Tom Benson, you know, his uncertain status and who will take over the team when he's gone and all those kinds of things. And then you alluded to Mickey Loomis. Is he going to continue as the GM? Will he move over to the Pelicans full time? You know, is Jeff Ireland going to ascend to the GM spot? There's so many questions in New Orleans that it could, you know, that's another place where if you're a Saints fan like I am, boy, you're kind of holding your breath. I think that there are a lot of reasons, if you're a Saints fan, that you might be happy to see Sean Payton go. The team has really kind of been on a mostly downward spiral since the suspension took place, and that's not certainly all in Sean Payton's lap. I mean, the team was really drafted poorly up until this most recent draft, but maybe it's time for a new direction, and quite frankly, I think it'll be really interesting to see what kind of a head coach Sean Payton is. If he doesn't have a true franchise veteran quarterback, you know, directing his offense. And the Saints, to some degree, really got lucky. You don't find a franchise guy in free agency very often. And, you know, obviously Drew Brees was a special case because they had already drafted his heir apparent when the Chargers let him go, and he was coming off a serious injury that left his career in doubt. But whatever happened, the Saints were able to find a once-in-a-lifetime guy, probably the best Saint of all time. Will Payton be able to go somewhere, you know, and be able to groom someone or step into a situation where there's already a quarterback that can really run his offense? I mean, let's talk about San Francisco. You want to talk about a muddy quarterback picture. Not only has Colin Kaepernick been ineffective the last 2 years, he's got an injury that's going to take 4 to 6 months to recover from. Meanwhile, they've got a Blaine Gabbert who's sitting there, who's already washed up, you know, been washed up with one team, was serviceable this year, but doesn't look like he's the answer. Do you draft someone? Do you try to rehabilitate Kaepernick? And almost any team that he could potentially go to is probably not going to have answers at the quarterback position. So we'll get to see if his offense works well with someone who's maybe not the caliber of a Drew Brees, and we'll also potentially get to see Payton groom a quarterback. And I think those are two things we haven't seen yet from a Sean Payton, even though obviously he's very talented and has been a proven winner.
Yeah, and, you know, my question is who then kind of comes in there for the Saints, you know. I think that's where you saw the Colts, excuse me, retain Chuck Pagano. I think that's why you're going to see the Lions, you know, retain, you know, their head coach. You know, I think that's where there's just not a ton of just, you know, overwhelming head coaching candidates. And we kind of talked about that in last week's show there. So I think that's where you're looking at, you know, okay, yeah, maybe they want to get, you know, kind of, you know, turn the page. And the question then with Drew Brees is, hey, does he then, if they get rid of Sean Payton, does he say, hey, I'm going to keep my, you know, cap number where it's at, which is going to be the highest cap number in the NFL at
right.
$30 million next year, you know, and kind of force his way out there. Maybe he then goes to San Francisco. If Payton goes, you know, to San Francisco there, they've got a ton of cap space. You know, so I think it's going to be an interesting situation, but I think, you know, you've got to be able to kind of move on here quickly, you know, whether you're the Saints, you know, because you can't be holding the bag and not being able to interview any you know, head coaching candidates as people are kind of setting up interviews this week. And, you know, a lot of interviews happened the last couple of days, and then, you know, kind of going forward. So you've got to make some decisions here, you know, very quickly in the next, you know, week or so, and kind of what you want to do with, you know, with your franchise there. So, you know, talking about Sean Payton, and again, I alluded to, you know, the Colts having interest. You know, like you said, some people say yes, some people say no. It was a very interesting, you know, Monday night press conference at 10:30 Eastern there with Jim Irsay, Ryan Grigson, and Chuck Pagano. I think that's, you know, we all can kind of say that was a little bit awkward, I thought. You know, I mean, you know, people says, oh, that there wasn't any rift between Chuck Pagano and Ryan Grigson. I think we all believe that there was and there still is. You could just see that in that press conference regardless of the tension, you know, in that room. Obviously, Jim Irsay was in the middle. It wasn't like Grigson and Pagano were buddy-buddy sitting next to each other, you know, yucking it up. But I think, you know, Irsay was like, hey, he had so much overwhelming support from the players there, the Frank Gores, you know, the other guys that had kind of gone out there and said, hey, Pagano's a guy who we want to play for. You know, and I thought it was interesting, too, that Irsay gave Gregson a contract extension. So they're tied at the hip. So I think Irsay probably went in there and said, hey, we're going to keep Pagano. Gregson, you want your job, you better work things out with him. And let's try to go, you know, win a Super Bowl. So we'll see if they don't, you know, kind of turn it around with their drafts and with their free agent signings, what happens with Ryan Gregson and Chuck Pagano, because we could be talking about this next year at the time that they've gone in a different direction. So interesting thing. I mean, what was your take of that press conference there and kind of that situation there?
If I'm Chuck Pagano, I'm happy that I'm still there, but I'm also a little concerned because I've kind of got an anchor tied around my neck. I mean, their fates are kind of intertwined, and you know, the question is, are they going to – this team struggled to finish, looked like – I mean, in a division that was pretty much wide open all season, and they've got – you know, obviously, they have a franchise quarterback who was hurt a lot of the year, but I don't – I'm concerned if I'm Chuck Pagano that Gregson can draft the replacements for a Frank Gore, for an Andre Johnson, for all these guys we had to plug in because we didn't have players that were ready to step up when we needed them to. You know, this is something I kind of hit on quite a bit, but the Colts are third from the bottom in number of draftees in the league right now. They've got 33, I think. And that's really bad. And if you're not continually restoring players on your team, you're in big trouble. And so you age, your core ages, and you know you've got something to worry about. So I don't know. I mean, if I'm Pagano, I'm happy that I'm back. And clearly, I think he's won the power struggle. But can he manage the team on the field and help run, you know, personnel and maybe get things going in the right direction there? That seems like mission impossible to me. But, you know, he lives another day, and, you know, we'll see if he and Andrew Luck can kind of get things turned around and they can make the right decisions in the coming draft that reinforce the team. But there's a, you know, obviously a lot of uncertainty there.
Yeah, you know, and kind of another situation that's come up here kind of yesterday, I think it was starting to get reported in regards to there was in Buffalo. The owner kind of came out there and said, hey, Doug Whaley and Rex Ryan, you basically, it's playoff or bust. You both are, you know, could be gone, you know, if we don't make the playoffs next year. You know, Mario Williams, the defensive end, a lot of people are saying he's out the door. He wasn't very productive in Rex Ryan's defense. He was obviously the number one overall pick a number of years ago and just, you know, been a productive player in the NFL. You know, they obviously were, you know, able to upset the Jets and keep them out of the playoffs there, you know, on Sunday. So it's interesting. They were 8-8 coming off a 9-6 season, you know, but do they have a quarterback? You know, can Rex Ryan, you know, save his job with the playoff run for the Buffalo Bills this upcoming season?
Boy, that's another team that's really interesting to me because they've tied, you know, again, I don't think all the T's have been crossed and I's dotted, but it looks like Doug Whaley's going to get an extension along with a mandate that he's gone and if they don't go to the playoffs next year. I think, to me, Rex Ryan did a great job. I don't know that the Bills had the talent that a lot of the other teams in the AFC have, and yet they got to 8-8 and were able to knock the Jets out of the playoffs. You know, I think, as you mentioned, I think the jury, to some degree, is still out on Tyrod Taylor. I think he played a lot better than a lot of people expected him to this year, but is he the guy that you want going forward? Is he the guy that's going to take you to the playoffs? I don't know. And there are still a lot of questions about the situation there. there are just so many teams right now where you could put TBA as, what to expect from them. And I think the Bills are certainly one of those teams. It's just really unusual to me that you would tie a GM and a head coach together that have a lengthy contract ahead of them, but also give them that, you know, playoffs or bust kind of ultimatum. So I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. And And obviously now that the college football season is over, and it's something that the inside the league has been tracking, and had 70 new names yesterday in regards to agent signings. I know you're probably getting inundated with stuff here this morning on guys as far as that sign. But we talk about the kind of the top 10 picks, and we kind of went through that a couple of weeks ago in regards to where these guys would land. Looks like CAA, no surprise in regards to top 10 picks. Is leading there with Joey Bosa and Lemary Tunsil. Rep one, Jared Goff, the quarterback out of Cal. Lee Steinberg, who's back in the game, signed Paxton Lynch. I thought that was a surprise. Athletes First, Jalen Ramsey, the cornerback there with Florida State. Impact Sports, Robert Nandici, who didn't play in the bowl game because of some of the off-field stuff. And we're still waiting to see if Jalen Smith decides to declare coming off that injury. I'm wondering if he decides to kind of go back to Notre Dame, but kind of, take basically a redshirt year and then go into the 2017 draft. I think that's an interesting situation. He's got a $5 million insurance policy, but, what would that do there? So something to watch there. Another Notre Dame guy, Ronnie Stanley, hasn't signed. Vernon Hargroves, DeForest Buckner, not out there. The Steinberg thing to me is the most interesting thing, in those signings. What else signings have interest you or have you thought was unique here in this this year's cycle?
Well, the Steinberg signing, I think, of Lynch took a lot of people by surprise, and it was I've been hearing rumors for weeks about it, but I guess it was a little something that I was struggling to take seriously, but. Obviously, he closed the deal and has to be congratulated for that. Among the four names you listed there at the end, we've learned that Ronnie Stanley, or at least we're told that Ronnie Stanley has made an agent choice. Don't know which agent that's going to be, but we're kind of waiting breathlessly. I'm trying to find that out. Jalen Smith, as you alluded to, probably has a tough call, but my experience has been that most players, if they're leaning towards coming out, if they've given a lot of thought, even if they're coming off an injury, are probably better off leaving because their heart's kind of in the league, and a lot of times they'll come back, but they're a little bit less than enthusiastic about playing for their college team, and they tend to lose a little bit of the shine and a little bit of the luster. That's just my opinion. Anyway, Vernon Hargreaves, the cornerback from Miami, it seems to be a shoo-in to come out early. He it looks like he's got it down to either Joel Siegel with Lagardère Unlimited, or Drew Rosenhaus with Rosenhaus Sports. And DeForest Buckner out of Oregon, I'm told, has it down to four agencies either. CAA, Rep 1, Jason Bernstein of Clarity Football, Jason just left XAM Sports to join Clarity, and so that would be quite a coup for him if he can land Buckner, and Joel Siegel of Lagardère Unlimited. So still a little bit of uncertainty there among some of the top players, and still a lot of ways things could go. But you're looking at two players in Laramie Tunsil and Joey Bosa who could be number one overall. So if that's the case, then CAA will get that distinction of having the top player in the draft, which is always puts a nice bow in your draft if you're an agency.
Yeah, and what do you kind of got 90 seconds here left. I mean, what do you think we'll hear in the next 48 hours, news cycle in regards to signings, anything that will pop up here before the week ends?
Well, we'll be watching those four, and, of course, we've still got another week and change until juniors can no longer declare for the draft, and so we'll be watching. I haven't heard a lot of buzz on players that could be top 10, top 15 picks that are leaning towards coming out, but there are always surprises, and we still have about a little more than a week on that, so we will see.
Yeah, definitely, and obviously the show kind of topped off a guy who had a great Rose Bowl, McCaffrey, who's not eligible for the this year's draft, but I just saw Barry Sanders Jr. Will transfer from Stanford, so as kind of a graduate transfer there, so that's something to be watch there as we go into next year's college football season. He was a highly recruited and very five star high school player and obviously the son of the great Barry Sanders. So it'll be interesting to see what Barry Sanders Jr. ends up there and in college football. So, Neil, another great show, and look forward to talking with you here in the future.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Justin. It was a lot of fun, and can't wait till next week.